Pull up a chair. I want to take you back to a warm February afternoon in 1942, out over the Pacific, southwest of an island called Rabaul. The sky is that deep tropical blue you only get over open ocean, and somewhere down below, a United States Navy carrier is steaming along with about 3,000 men aboard who have no idea their whole world is about to hang on one young pilot. And a single-engine fighter that everybody, including the men who flew it, called a little barrel with wings. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Tail Dragger, and this is The Hangar, where we don't just read you the dates, we try to put you in the cockpit. And today, the cockpit belongs to a lieutenant named Edward O'Hare, who most everybody called Butch by the time the sun went down on the February One of those precious carriers was the Lexington. Lady Lex, the crew called her. She and her task force were pushing toward the big Japanese base at Rabaul, way down at the top of the Solomon Islands, hoping to hit it and disrupt the enemy buildup. Trouble was, the Japanese spotted the task force first, and once you've been spotted by a base full of bombers, you know what's coming. It's just a question of when. Now here's where it gets interesting. The fighter these men were flying was the Grumman Wildcat. The F-4F, if you want the designation. Stubby, round, not pretty if we're being honest. It had these little bicycle-looking landing gear that the pilot had to crank up by hand, turn after turn after turn, right after takeoff, so you'd always spot a new Wildcat pilot, by the way, his airplane porpoised down the runway, while he was busy winding that crank. The Wildcat was slower than the Japanese Zero. It couldn't climb with a Zero. It couldn't turn with a Zero. On paper, it lost every argument. But the Wildcat had two things going for it that mattered more than the numbers. It could take a beating. That Grumman airframe was built like a bank vault, and Grumman got a nickname out of the war for exactly that reason. They called the company the Grumman Ironworks, and the other thing the Wildcat had was 650 caliber machine guns. When those guns spoke, things came apart. So that's the airplane. Round, tough, honest, outgunned on paper. Now, let me tell you about the man strapped into it. Butch O'Hare was from St. Louis, Missouri. Annapolis graduate, Naval Academy, class of 1937. He was a big, easygoing fellow with a wide grin, the kind of pilot other pilots liked to be around. He'd worked hard to become a fine shot, a real gunnery man, and that afternoon, that skill was going to be the only thing standing between eight bombers and the deck of the Lexington. Here's the setup. Late in the afternoon on the 20th, the Lexington's radar, and radar was brand new witchcraft back then, picked up a wave of Japanese bombers coming in. Big twin-engine land bombers, the type the Allies later codenamed Betty. The first wave got tangled up with the Wildcats already airborne, and the American pilots and the ship's gunners did good work. They knocked that first wave down hard, but the ship's radar and lookouts caught something else, a second group of bombers, coming in from a completely different bearing, low and fast, and there was almost nobody left to stop them. most of the fighters were low on fuel or low on ammunition or off chasing the first wave. The Lexington had scrambled every airplane she could, and now here came 8 bombers, boring straight in toward the ship, and the only thing between them and Lady Lex was Butch O'Hare and his wingman. And then it got worse. His wingman's guns jammed, wouldn't fire, so that fella had to peel off, and now the math is about as ugly as math gets in this business. 1 Wildcat. 1 pilot. 8 bombers. Think about that for a second, really sit with it. You are one man in one airplane, and there are 8 bombers in a tight formation, each one bristling with defensive guns, and behind them is a ship carrying 3,000 of your shipmates. There's no time to wait for help. There's no help coming. If those bombers get through, the Lexington is gone, and everybody on her with it. And you are the only answer to the question. Most men, I think, would have done what they could and prayed. Butch O'Hare did math. He'd studied gunnery. He understood deflection shooting, hitting a moving target by aiming where it's going to be, not where it is, and he understood that his time was measured in seconds. So he did something cold-blooded and brilliant. He climbed above and ahead of the formation, rolled in, and instead of a wild slashing pass, he made a high-side gunnery run, coming down out of the sun in a curve that let him rake the bombers from an angle where their own guns couldn't easily answer, and he did not waste a bullet.
Now picture the cockpit. The Wildcat is loud. That 14-cylinder Pratt & Whitney radial up front is a roar you feel in your chest more than hear. The whole airframe is shaking. The smell in there is hot oil and gasoline, and the sharp cordite stink of his own guns once he starts firing. That smell that gets into your clothes and stays for days. He's got the throttle firewalled, the wind is screaming, and he's diving into a wall of 8 airplanes. He lines up the trailing bomber on the far side of the formation, short burst. Watches the tracers walk right into the engine. And here's the thing a real gunner knows. He aims for the engines, not the fuselage, because you kill the engine, you kill the airplane's ability to reach the ship. That first bomber's engine coughs black smoke, and the whole airplane slews out of formation and starts down toward the sea. He doesn't watch it fall, no time. He's already sliding his sights to the next one, another short burst, another engine torn apart, another bomber staggering out of the pack. He comes screaming through and past them, hauls that little barrel of an airplane around in a hard climbing turn, blood draining out of his head from the G, and he sets up and comes back for a second pass. He's threading through their formation now, close enough to see the enemy gunners swinging their weapons at him, close enough to hear their rounds snapping past, and he keeps his nerve and keeps shooting in those short, disciplined bursts, not spraying. Aiming, engine, engine, engine. When the smoke cleared and the shooting stopped, the men on the deck of the Lexington had watched the whole thing overhead, and they couldn't believe what they'd just seen. In the span of about 6 minutes, one Wildcat had torn into a formation of 8 bombers and knocked down 5 of them all by himself, with the guns going empty at the end. 5 bombers in one engagement, in about the time it takes you to pre-flight an airplane.
Later study trimmed that official number a little. The way these things always get sorted out afterward when everybody compares notes and gun camera film. But make no mistake, the essential truth of it never budged. One man alone broke up a bomber attack that had a clear run at an American carrier, and he saved the ship. The surviving bombers scattered and dumped their loads, and not one bomb hit the Lexington. 3,000 men went home because Butch O'Hare flew straight into 8 airplanes and refused to let them pass. His plane came back with exactly 1 bullet hole in it. 1. From 8 bombers full of gunners. That's not just courage, that's flying. Now here's where the story turns from a dogfight into something bigger. When he landed back aboard, they counted his ammunition and worked out that he'd used something like 60 rounds per bomber. 60 rounds to knock down an airplane. Any of you who've done any shooting understand what a number like that means. That's not luck. That's a marksman who made every single trigger pull count when his own life and 3,000 others were riding on it. They gave him the Medal of Honor. President Roosevelt himself put it around his neck at the White House, with his young wife Rita standing right there beside him. He became the Navy's first ace of the war and its first naval aviator to receive the Medal of Honor in the Second World War. Overnight, this easygoing kid from St. Louis was the most famous fighter pilot in America. His face was in every paper. He was the good news the country was starving for, in a season when there wasn't much good news to go around. And Butch, by every account, handled the fame about the way you'd want a man to handle it. He went right back to work. He kept flying. He kept fighting. And here's the part that puts the lump in your throat. By late 1943, the Japanese had started coming at the carriers at night, when the fighters of the day couldn't find them. So O'Hare, by then a lieutenant commander running a fighter squadron, helped pioneer one of the first night fighter tactics off a carrier. The idea was to send up a radar-equipped bomber to find the enemy, and pair it with a couple of fighters flying tight on its wing in the pitch black, using the bigger plane's radar as their eyes. It was dangerous, experimental seat-of-the-pants flying in total darkness over open water, and Butch O'Hare volunteered to lead it. On the night of the 26th of November 1943, out near the Gilbert Islands, he took off into the dark to try it for real. There was confusion up there, muzzle flashes, Japanese aircraft mixed in with American ones, everybody straining to see in a blackness so complete you couldn't tell the sea from the sky. And somewhere in that chaos, Butch O'Hare's Wildcat was hit and went down into the ocean. They never found him. He was 29 years old. The man who single-handedly saved a carrier in broad daylight was lost in the dark, pushing into brand new territory so that other pilots could survive the night. That was who he was. Always out on the edge, going first so somebody else wouldn't have to. Now let me bring it home for you, because this is the part almost everybody has brushed up against and never knew it. After the war, the city of Chicago wanted to name its brand new airport for a local hero. Butch O'Hare's family had deep Chicago roots. And so in 1949, they took a field out northwest of the city, a place that had been an aircraft factory site called Orchard Field, and they renamed it O'Hare International Airport. That's why to this very day, the airport code for O'Hare is Oscar Romeo Delta. O-R-D Orchard, the old name still hiding right there in the identifier, the way these things do if you know where to look. So the next time you're grinding through a connection at O'Hare, jammed in a concourse, listening to the gate agent call the standby list, waiting on a delay, I want you to remember something. That whole enormous place, one of the busiest airports on planet Earth, is named for a 29-year-old fighter pilot who dove alone into 8 bombers with a stubby little Grumman, saved 3,000 of his shipmates, and then flew off into the dark and never came back. There's a plaque and one of his Wildcats hanging in a terminal there, if you ever want to go find it, and I'd argue it's worth the walk. Because we throw the word hero around pretty cheap these days. We hang it on people for scoring touchdowns. Butch O'Hare is the real article. The genuine, no argument, dictionary definition article. Back when Avigus was cheap and airspace was free, the old heads at the field used to tell this story to the young pilots, not to scare them, but to show them what one person with skill and nerve and a cool head could do when everything was on the line, and I think it still holds up. The airplane was outclassed on paper, the odds were absurd, and it didn't matter because the man flying it had put in the work. And when the moment came, he was ready for it. That to me is the whole thing right there. You don't get to pick your moment, you just get to be ready for it when it finds you. Butch O'Hare spent years becoming a marksman for 6 minutes he didn't know were coming. My thanks to the United States Navy's own history and heritage records for the account of the action off Bougainville, and to the folks at the National Naval Aviation Museum in Pensacola, who keep the memory of pilots like O'Hare alive, so the rest of us don't forget. If you want to see it written up, come find us at radiohangar.com and I'll point you toward the good sources. That's the story I had for you today. Next time you're stuck at Oscar Romeo Delta, look up at that Wildcat hanging in the terminal and tip your hat. He earned it. This is Taildragger. Keep the greasy side down.